Greetings, Tacoma. John Doherty here once again with KTAH 101.9's Climate Talk. I'm a Citizens Climate Lobby activist, and this is the program where we talk about all things climate, and always respectfully, of course. I do value your and everyone's opinions on this subject, such important subject of climate change. And if you want to drop me a note, you can send it to John, J-O-H-N, at cclTacoma.org. So today we're going to be talking fun facts. Now, you'll probably notice that some of my fun facts are tongue-in-cheek, or maybe more accurate, a little on the ironic side, because there's little that's fun going on in the environment right now. But as we will see, there are some fun things going on in our responses to the challenge. By the way, just as a quick aside here, for those of you who love the English language, and I count myself amongst those, there's an interesting exercise that can be done, and that is to come up with a good definition of irony. It's easier to offer an example of irony than to actually define it. So here's one that I came up with. Let's say, for instance, there's a political movement. They've gotten too far out of the mainstream of opinion in society, so they were unable to gain political traction, and their opposition was successful as a result. The irony being that their tactic resulted in their defeat. Okay, here we go. Fun fact. Advertising for residential real estate has started including a walkability score. That is, what kind of errands can be done by walking from a particular residence. The sad fact is that most of our residences aren't very walkable, and that means most of our residences require a car just to go through the activities of life. I do think it's a positive development that somebody's starting to think about this, and also seeing that having a home where some errands are going to work or whatever can be done by walking. And of course, if it can be done by walking, it could be done by bike. Okay, fun fact. I was born in Australia. Okay, not that fun fact. And even though Australia is a very large country with a relatively thin population, you can get from just about anywhere in Australia to just about anywhere else via an effective public transportation system, even to villages of only a few hundred people. All of that public transportation is done with an extensive bus and rail system within the large cities. Then there are the long-distance country trains that join the major cities, and along the way there are stops at smaller cities where buses connect to even villages of just 200 or 300 people. And of course, for those who are in a big hurry between the big cities, there are express trains that skip those little stops. Short version is that there's scarcely a place in Australia you can't get to pretty close to your home or whatever your destination is using public transportation. Now, in the United States, we often get the excuse regarding our, let's face it, pathetic public transportation system, and that is that we're a very large country with scattered population, not a lot of population density, except in our large cities. Well, that defines Australia pretty much too, and they are able to have what is really an excellent public transportation system. And you could point to Japan also. Japan has got a fantastic public transportation system. The short version is that we just really lack the political will to provide for a decent system of public transportation, and as a result, we put a lot of carbon dioxide in the air that we don't need to, with a bunch of cars roaming around all over the countryside with just one passenger in them most of the time. So next fun fact, let's talk about countries' carbon dioxide emissions, but instead of talking about them as countries, let's talk about them just a second here as per capita emissions. In other words, how much carbon dioxide is emitted by the average person within that country. Not quite fair to take a country like India with over 1 billion people and just do an apples-to-apples comparison with the United States with just 350 million people when we're looking at carbon dioxide emissions. Now, there are a few small countries, and for whatever reason, I don't know why their CO2 footprint is so high. I'm talking about countries like Liechtenstein. They have a higher carbon footprint per person than the United States does. But in the relatively significant countries of the world, I'm talking about United States, Canada, Australia, India, China, European Union, Russia, those kind of places, the United States is right at the top of the stack. How do we compare with a country like China, for instance, well, our per capita CO2 footprint in the United States is twice what it is in China. And India's footprint compared to ours on a per capita basis is actually tiny. So anyone who points to India and or China with the perspective of like, well, look at all the CO2 they're emitting, and until they do something, we're not going to do anything. We as individuals are emitting way more per person than they are in those countries, and that guy who's criticizing China and India is just whistling Dixie, in my view. Okay, let's switch gears to garbage trucks. You know, those monsters that are roaming around our streets all day long, gathering up the detritus of our lives, stuff that we like to think of as being thrown away. Fun fact, there is no place that is away. Everything we buy, while it eventually disappears, just goes back into the environment. One of the nastiest things we toss back into the environment is plastic. Now, this is a climate program, so what's plastic got to do with it? Plastic is a fossil fuel product, and as we turn away from fossil fuels, the producers are wondering what to do with all the oil and gas they own. And one answer is to expand the production of plastic. And the politics and opinion issues presented by climate change can also be seen in our relationship with plastic. Essentially, a destructive way of doing business out of habit and convenience, and all driven by an incredibly wealthy industry that manipulates government to its own ends. Now, I can see that there are cases where human environmental costs of eliminating a plastic would exceed the benefits. But for the overwhelming most part, plastic is a convenience that we can live without. A convenience that is causing great damage to our environment and to the wildlife that lives in that environment. In the ocean, for instance, right now, there is the equivalent of a garbage truckload of plastic being dumped into the ocean every minute. Most seabirds have plastic in their guts, unable to distinguish between plastic and food. You can do a Google and take a look for images of birds that have died from ingesting plastic. Then do the same thing for whales. It's not a pretty picture. I could go on. Plastic breaks down until it's small enough to be ingested by fish, and from there it gets into a food chain that we're a part of, and we ingest the microplastics. Oh, hang on a minute, but what about recycling plastic? Fun fact, only about 10% of plastic is recycled. You know those triangles with a number from 1 to 7 on the bottom of the plastic containers? Realistically, only plastic numbers 1 and 2 are ever recycled. The remainder of the numbers are more about industry propaganda than recycling, creating the ruse that those plastics are going to be recycled, or even it's possible to recycle them. And even the ones and twos are mostly not recycled, and then those plastics can only be recycled a few times. 7 times is the maximum amount of times that a plastic can be recycled. The only environmentally effective way to deal with plastic is to leave the oil in the ground. For us as individuals who care about the health of the world, an answer is to avoid buying and throwing away plastic products. And keep in mind, every time we buy a plastic product, sooner or later it's going to end up back in the environment, a place where it's not going to degrade, where it's just going to last forever. Okay, next subject. Laminated timber is a relatively new system here in the United States for constructing commercial buildings, and the system's called cross-laminated timber, or CLT for short. Essentially, it takes relatively small farm trees, cuts the logs into thin slices, glues them together to form structural beams and other panels, things like that. Here's what's cool about that. Similar buildings, office buildings, let's say a 5-story high office building, is traditionally made of steel and concrete. Both of those are hugely carbon intensive and CO2 emitting industries. Okay, fun fact. If the world's concrete industry was a country, they would rank number 8 in the world for carbon dioxide pollution. In the instance of CLT, the carbon is stored in the wood, and from there in the buildings, and CLT-constructed buildings are essentially carbon neutral because of all the carbon that is stored in the wood. So I'm encouraging you to take a look on YouTube for CLT process in a factory. There's one in Spokane that's doing great and producing very large amounts, and there's CLT buildings going up in various places in the United States right now. Take a look at that process on a YouTube. I'd say it's pretty cool, and it's an example of how technology can be applied to reduce our CO2 emissions. If you want to look it up, the company's name in Spokane is Katerra, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Starts with a K. Okay, here's another fun fact. TPUs, Tacoma Public Utilities, electricity is 97% hydro, which means it is pretty much carbon free. TPU actually has more electricity that's needed here locally, and they export some of that nice clean hydroelectricity to other areas, so that's a big plus. Why the 3% that's not hydroelectric? Well, it's complicated, and I'll be honest with you, I don't understand it, but apparently it's related to long-term contracts that require TPU to buy electricity from some sources that still use fossil fuels for creating their electricity. What this fun fact of clean electricity here in Tacoma and much of Pierce County means is that next time you're shopping for an appliance, a stove, a hot water heater, a dryer, take a look at buying an electric one versus a carbon dioxide producing gas appliance. You'll be reducing your footprint if you do that. Of course, there are other things going on out there that can bring a smile to our face during these difficult times. One of them is the cost of solar energy. Fun fact, the cost of solar panels has decreased by a factor of 300 since 1977. That's an incredible drop, of course, and it continues to drop. And at this point, solar panels are cheaper than coal to produce electricity. By the way, just interjecting here, when we say cheaper, we're talking about the actual cost to the consumer. There is a big caveat, however, around petroleum product produced electricity, and that is that the full cost is not reflected in the cost of the consumer. I'm talking about the cost of the pollution, the toxins, the particle matter, and most importantly, the cost to all of us in terms of climate change. So, fun fact, a similar decrease in price has shown up with wind energy. At this point, wind energy can be put online cheaper than natural gas energy can be put online. And, bonus, there's no fracking with wind energy. All of the bad things that happen with fracking not included in the price also of that natural gas, unfortunately. We have a lot of installed wind in the United States at this point. We have about 100 gigawatts, which is just a number for most of us, but by comparison, we're second in the world for wind energy just behind China, although China's way ahead of us. Another way of looking at it is what percentage of our total energy comes from wind, and in the United States, it's about 7% of total energy. That puts us behind a significant number of other countries, however. So Denmark, Germany, Ireland, and Portugal get over 20% of their total electric needs from wind. Denmark gets over 40% of their energy from wind. Now, of course, wind energy is intermittent, so that brings its own problems with it. And exceeding a threshold of 30% of energy coming from wind is a challenge that requires addressing. It can be addressed, but it's still a challenge. Well, in the United States, there are several states that have passed that threshold. Those are Kansas, Iowa, Oklahoma, and North and South Dakota. Not a surprise because the plains are a great place for strong, consistent winds. So, what state has the most installed wind generating capacity? Fun fact, it's Texas. Good old petroleum-rich Texas. Why is that the case there? Well, they got lots of space, and the ranchers and farmers can put up a wind turbine, they can get the royalties from that wind turbine, and continue to farm all around their wind turbine. Okay, so enough of fun facts for now. I have gotten a kick out of finding these fun facts and putting them out there. In fact, I'm going to call today's program Fun Facts 1 so that there can be follow-ons. Drop me a note at john@ccltacoma.org, and until then, as always, I'm reminding you, live like the mountain is out. Take care now.